and running.
So it is June 3rd today. June 4th today. And we are with
Lori
Chafer. Lots of names going on. And we're interviewing him just to collect his history for the LGBTQ History Project. So Lloyd, tell me a little bit about where you grew up, like maybe your family background, a little bit of that.
Sure. I'm a native of Green Bay, Wisconsin. I've lived here all my life, except for when I went to school down to Madison in the late 70s. I'm recently retired as a pharmacist. I have two undergraduate degrees, one in biology, one in pharmacy. My parents are no longer living. I do have an older half-brother living out in California with his wife and three kids and their grandkids. In town here, I have another sister, half-sister, with her husband and two kids who are both married and have children of their own. I have a sister just older than me who's single. Then there was me, and then my younger sister who is married, and she has two children. And as of Wednesday, both of them will be married as well. So I grew up with three sisters living at home. My brother had left for the Navy shortly after I was born. He's 17, 18 years older than I am. And so he wasn't around. And then when they started having children, when my siblings started having children, they produced seven nieces. So not too much, a lot of estrogen, not too much testosterone in the family. And finally, though, the next generation, they're starting to have grandnephews and grandnieces for me, who I really enjoy.
So. Okay, awesome. So what, growing up in Green Bay, what was that like in terms of LGBTQ community life? Was it visible? Was it not visible?
It was really kind of non-issue back then. I mean, I grew up in 1955. I was born, and it was just something that wasn't not discouraged or to talk about or not brought up in any situation, and or at least in my family. And so, really, it was kind of a non-issue. Going through grade school and then into junior high school, certainly one becomes self-aware and aware of people around you and issues along those lines. But again, it was really brought up, unless I guess one read about a terrible situation in the newspaper or in the news or so related to these issues. It just wasn't discussed. Another aspect would be religious upbringing. I grew up in a Wisconsin Synod Lutheran Church, which is probably one of the more conservative synods in the denomination. And fortunately, and I've heard some horror stories from my fellow Wells members that they had been pretty well persecuted and driven out of their church. To the point that it's still affecting them today, that they don't trust churches, and it's very discouraging to hear that. But fortunately, the clergy at our church never really approached that issue, never approached my family about me being potentially gay, and so I was very blessed in that regard. So that, along with I don't want to say ignorant, but they certainly were supportive family. I had a pretty decent childhood growing up throughout grade school, junior high school, senior high school. Lived 3 years at home when I was going to college, and then down to Madison for 3 years. And it wasn't until I came back from Madison that I started exploring maybe going out and meeting other gay people, because you were exposed to those when you were down in college more so than you were here in Green Bay.
Right. So you said when you came back from Madison is when you started? What kind of spaces did you go to meet other LGBTQ people?
It is because, I guess I wasn't really aware that there were gay bars in Green Bay back in the mid-70s. You know, it was heard that there was a place where people could meet, but I didn't really have the opportunity to explore. Back then, kids didn't really have cars on their own, and I was just satisfied staying at home with my family anyway, so I wasn't going out looking for possibilities of meeting other people.
Mm-hmm.
But once you get down to Madison, certainly meet other people and see other situations. And then when you come back to Green Bay, either during the summer, you start seeking things out and looking for people of your own kind that you can interact with.
Mm-hmm.
And there certainly were possibilities back then. I think people aren't aware that at one time there were 5 gay bars in Green Bay, 5 or 6. And so there's certainly opportunities. And and they became social events that weren't necessarily, depending on what you wanted to do, I guess, if you just wanted to meet people, just kind of hang out for a while. And that's kind of what I did. I was just kind of a person who was really just wanting to meet other people and find out what their stories were as well.
Right.
So.
Right. So then you said you came back from Madison and then kind of became more active with the community here. Mm-hmm. What other types of spaces did you seek out, or how did you become more involved within mm-hmm. the community?
Well, even back then, everyone kept a fairly decent, fairly low-key lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
It depended on personality, and that sufficed for me. I wasn't flamboyant. I wasn't in your face with a lot. I certainly was an activist.
Mm-hmm.
I care about the causes, but I really kept to myself. Didn't share my views on these particular issues with my family or anyone else other than those people I was closest to and those people that you met at the bar.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of knew who you wanted to stay away from and those who you wanted to hang out with. Back then, it was safe enough for people to open up their homes after bar to have after bar parties,
mm-hmm.
where there might be small amounts of food, and
mm-hmm.
it was just a way to kind of carry on after bar hours closed. And still, it was a safe, clean, still healthy environment back then.
Mm-hmm.
As far as other opportunities, there really weren't. There certainly weren't support groups.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't PFLAG. There wasn't Positive Voice. It was only later in the early 90s, I understand, that I think it was a reaction to something nationally that a group out at UWGB decided to kind of form a group, kind of a support group for new kids on campus and
mm-hmm.
and become a little bit more, not necessarily political, but as activists.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I got involved with Positive Voice.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was 20 years ago this month that there was a informal meeting at someone's house here on the east side of Green Bay.
Wow.
And eclectic group of people met. No women, as far as I remember. It was just
mm-hmm.
men. And it was a kickoff of what would turn out to be Positive Voice.
Mm-hmm.
There was a similar group down in Appleton who had was more of a professional men's group. And they existed for a while. But then eventually their membership folded into Positive Voice.
Mm-hmm.
And so we represent Northeast Wisconsin. There was a women's group actually before even Positive Voice. It was called Northern Women. And they had,
mm-hmm.
one time had a membership roll of over 315 members.
Wow.
And occasionally they'd get together for potlucks,
mm-hmm.
Summer picnics, house parties. And they were really quite active.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden their membership just dwindled, and then their membership was also rolled over into Positive Voice.
Mm-hmm.
So what started out as basically a men's organization has developed into probably co-equal men and women, and certainly the leadership has gone from mostly male to periodically female. And we kind of like to see right now that the leader is a man, but
mm-hmm.
that might change tonight when we have a meeting.
Okay, yeah.
Sure, the next annual, the next business meeting where we select officers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good to see that over the years things have happened. They've been able to respond to incidences in the community.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me.
Oh yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
I have a friend down in Florida whose brother-in-law just passed away. I suspect he's calling. Hi, Hello?
Mark is unboxing.
Yeah, I don't know how this works.
Okay.
That's all right.
That's all right. So you're saying how it's been changing over time in the leadership. So when you're talking about the gay bars in Green Bay before, around what time was that, and what was the presence like? What were the people like there? I mean, who's
yeah, the what became, in my opinion, the first recognized a gay bar in Northeast Wisconsin was a place called, I think it was called the Manhole, and it was down on South Adams Street, South Washington Street.
Mm-hmm.
Two men who originally had connections with, they may have been from Green Bay area, but they certainly had connections to Milwaukee and Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And they thought Green Bay was right for an authentic gay bar. These guys, their scene was more Leather Levi, but they realized that they needed to kind of open up the bar to all types of people. They didn't restrict women, although
mm-hmm.
I rarely saw women down at the bar at that
mm-hmm.
time. It just wasn't there. But it was friendly and it was safe, and
mm-hmm.
and these guys were quite aware of the potential for the bar being vandalized, the parking lots being cruised by unsavory characters, and
mm-hmm.
The potential for many bad things to happen. And yet, from my understanding, there were very infrequent phone calls to the police in order to come in and help them out. They had their own security,
mm-hmm.
and so it was always a quite friendly place. Never saw a single fist fight or any untoward activity at those bars, or at the bar at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So it was safe. It was someplace that you could go, and you knew that it was an atmosphere that you hang around for a couple of minutes or a couple of hours, and it was dancing and live DJ,
mm-hmm.
and it was just kind of a relaxed, friendly atmosphere.
Right. So. Was there any like responses to HIV/AIDS in the community? Was there any worry or fear?
That certainly came out later. When I came out, you know, the AIDS crisis was certainly underway when I came back from school in 79.
Mm-hmm.
Already, you know, it had been identified in probably 73, 74, 75, and then really started to take off.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, the major metropolitan areas were hit hardest. That's not to say that those people from the area who did visit those areas might not have carried the virus back to the Green Bay area, and they certainly did, because it was shortly thereafter that we started having our first cases reported in the area.
Mm-hmm.
The response to that was incredible. A group of very civic-minded gay men, along with the support of another gay bar owner, decided that they need to take proactive response to this,
mm-hmm.
and they were offering HIV testing,
mm-hmm.
Free anonymous testing at the bar site. And eventually what started as just kind of a drop-in at one of these bars, go in the back room, be tested by qualified staff, trained staff, that they needed their own facilities, and out of that came ARCW, which I think was called something else before that, the AIDS Resource Center of Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
And they set up their shop down the street on Broadway,
mm-hmm.
South Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, they've moved their offices to South Adams, where Cricket is a business manager there, I believe. But he also does testing and does community advocacy and education.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
it's been very, very successful. And it was a very positive response to the HIV crisis. At the time, I was still a staff pharmacist at Bellin Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And it really became a kind of a wake-up call when we started to see patients coming in, and they were being treated for symptoms of HIV.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd come in, and they'd go home, and they'd come in, and they slowly deteriorate, and they'd pass away. I took it upon myself to personally go up and meet with these people. I didn't know them from Adam.
Mm-hmm.
But I just kind of felt that quite often I assumed that they were alone, that they needed just someone to talk to. And
mm-hmm.
It was a comfort for me, as much as a comfort for me as it may have been for them. And I really enjoyed doing that. lost several wonderful people in the process, but it was an eye-opener, and it probably did affect any potential negative behavior that I would have engaged in if I, mm-hmm. I didn't know that that this problem existed.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm. So before you were talking also about different that the bar scene was fairly safe and healthy. Do you remember any instances where there was any negative responses? Any specific incidences?
Yeah, if there was, the management took care of it right away.
Mm-hmm.
If it was something that they couldn't control, they had a great reputation with the rapport with the police, who were just about three blocks away,
mm-hmm.
and they responded
mm-hmm.
Promptly. But nothing that either disrupted bar activity
mm-hmm.
Or caused the bar to close down or anything like that. I'm very, very proud of the gay community and the bar owners that they've not had those types of situations in the years and years that they've been in operation.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike downtown Green Bay and Washington Adams, where it seems like the police are responding nightly, sometimes three, four times a night to some of these traditional bars, non-gay bar settings.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. And so now you work with Positive Voice.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get involved with that?
Again, it's probably friends of friends who invited me to this organizational meeting
mm-hmm.
20 years ago, and I was free that night. It was in the neighborhood, and I just thought I'd pop in,
mm-hmm.
and I thought, yeah, it's a pretty good idea. I've got some time on my hands, and I could, if I didn't want to be an officer, I could certainly be a member of the organization, kind of check them out, see if I could help out on committees, and have just stayed with them
mm-hmm.
ever since. Leadership and membership has certainly changed over the years. I'm kind of proud to say I'm still, I think, the last surviving member of Positive Voice, certainly the longest serving board member. I've served in all four capacities as both originally as vice president, then secretary, then president, then treasurer. So, but I'm currently not an officer. I just don't care to be. After tonight, that may change, but
mm-hmm.
I just want to leave it up to the next generation to kind of carry on and have them bring their ideas and thoughts to the organization and
mm-hmm.
grow it that way. So.
So being involved with an organization for so long, how have you seen it change over time?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we're a victim of our own success. Back then there was maybe issues that that we had to address.
Mm-hmm.
There was issues where there were some bashings in the area, and a critic could attest to that because he was a victim himself.
Mm-hmm.
And so we, as an organization, we thought we needed to be proactive again, and we did work
mm-hmm.
with the Green Bay Police Department, and they actually developed a trifold piece that would be available in the bars and the bookstores and other places, stating that, have you been harassed because of your sexual orientation?
Mm-hmm.
And we thought that that's pretty cool, that here in fairly conservative northeastern Wisconsin, that the police would be proactive with us.
Mm-hmm.
And if people acted on that, that's hard to say. I don't know what the numbers were on that.
Mm-hmm.
But at least our community and was seeing that someone that was at least being proactive. And also the police department was aware that we were kind of watching them as well and were willing to work with them in partnership.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. So have you seen other changes within the organization as
mm-hmm.
well, and what, how you do things? And
yeah, good question.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I think we're a victim of our own success in some regards, that back then there were needs that were identified and addressed. There's certainly other needs out there right now. There's still a lot of bullying going on.
Mm-hmm.
But those issues seem to be being addressed at the local level with GSAs, gay straight organizations in high school. The school districts themselves are aware that this is a serious problem, so they're addressing it. But certainly Positive Voice, which does have a speakers bureau, is more than willing to go out and speak to any group, church organizations, church groups, any group that'll have us. What we see is the current need right now are parents whose children are newly out, and they're having a tough time dealing with it.
Mm-hmm.
PFLAG was never very active in Green Bay area. There was a very active and effective group down in the valley. But again, I think other resources have come up, and people are either going online, parents going online to find out more about this. Those mm-hmm. who are hesitant to go to their clergy to talk about their gay son or their gay daughter have either come to terms or in worst cases have just kicked their kids out, and that's how they dealt with it. Have things changed? For the most part, yes. There's still problems that exist out there,
mm-hmm.
But groups like Positive Voice are there to kind of help people through this process as well,
right.
if they want,
mm-hmm.
if they need that help.
Mm-hmm. So how often do you meet for Positive Voice?
Positive Voice meets the first Monday of every month as a board, and we used to be very good about having socials every month as well. The board
mm-hmm.
meetings were the first Monday of the month,
mm-hmm.
and socials were third Monday of the month, and the local library was very gracious, allowing us to meet there 6 times a year free.
Wow.
The only restriction there is that we had to be out by 8:45 at night, and just as the meetings were getting going and great discussions,
mm-hmm.
and whoever we brought in as presenters,
mm-hmm.
we kind of ran out of time quite
right.
frequently,
yeah.
and even if they did end the presentation, there wasn't enough time for people to congregate. This may have been their only opportunity to meet in a neutral setting, a non-bar
mm-hmm.
setting, and just kind of interact with friends
mm-hmm.
that they met, and that often was kind of a hindrance to people.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, and hopefully after this this meeting tonight, and with more participation from the youth, they'll come up with some great ideas for new ideas for social activities, more
mm-hmm.
than just eating events or something. Actually bring in issues that they're really concerned about,
mm-hmm.
and bring in speakers, and because there is money in our treasury right now, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what's the membership like right now?
Well, unfortunately, it's dwindled. I think the active membership
mm-hmm.
role with families, singles and families, probably, I think our mailing list is about 65, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, even the mailing list, in terms of electronic transmission now, we're just online. And
mm-hmm.
So it's hard to say. We certainly get upwards of several thousand hits a month
mm-hmm.
on our website. So people are searching us out one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
For what their specific needs are, that's hard to say.
Right.
But we're there for them if they want. We do have a kind of a hotline, helpline for them to call.
Mm-hmm.
They don't always contact us at our post office box.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's very difficult to tell. Yeah, I think if that's the biggest change that has happened over the years is with social media the way that it is.
Mm-hmm.
Especially youth find assistance, find support in other ways.
Mm-hmm.
And as an organization that wants to be supportive financially with other things that's going on in the community, be it a night of noise or a day of silence or a gay prom,
mm-hmm.
And we want to support them that way, well, you kind of need money in order to kick back. But these kids, who
right.
quite often aren't working yet or have limited means, it's tough for them to come up even with a $15 a year membership.
Mm-hmm.
But those who are aware politically and want to be activists, so that they know the importance that that any organization lives by financial support too.
Mm-hmm.
We're a nonprofit, so everything that comes and goes out.
Right.
We're non-paid staff.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, our dream years ago was to have a drop-in center. And Positive Voice did have that at one time several
mm-hmm.
years ago when the domestic partnership amendment was going through the state.
Mm-hmm.
That group was parenting with our group.
Mm-hmm.
And we had our own facility, which was very nice. People loved their drop-in nights on Wednesday or Thursday nights every week. And it was neat, but after a while, leadership dwindled,
mm-hmm.
the enthusiasm wasn't there, and we couldn't rationalize keeping a without community support.
Right.
So.
That's really neat. How did membership work kind of before social media and all of that? Mm-hmm. Or how did people get connected to you?
It's basically word of mouth. It's a fairly close community. That when you did seek out people and you heard about activities that are out there, the word got out.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about starting up an organization like A Positive Voice back then was there are those who are really, really gung-ho and wanted to be activists and wanted to be kind of out there. Not necessarily in your face, but they wanted to be a lot more vocal and have a presence in the community. Well, there's a lot of people, especially older, formerly or currently married men and women, who didn't want to be that visible in the community, and that's understandable. And we really respected their decision to stay as low key as possible. So it's kind of very difficult to be an organization for the whole spectrum of people, those who really wanted to be out and those who just kind of wanted to be undercover as long as they could. Those who were visible being more outspoken, it did give courage to a lot of people who were less open to kind of come out, and they certainly grew because of it, and I think that was a strength that we had in the organization.
That'd be a hard band. So you also are involved in your church. Tell me about how that changed over time. When did you start becoming involved with your church, and how has that changed?
Sure. As I mentioned, I grew up in Wisconsin in a Lutheran church. My mother's family, all her sisters, brother, all grew up in that particular synod. And so growing up, we always attended everyone's confirmation, baptisms, weddings, and things like that. It was just a given.
Mm-hmm.
But again, as I mentioned, I'm very fortunate in our particular home church, church I was baptized, confirmed in, that I never faced the wrath and the persecution of even being suspected of being gay. Back then, I served quite faithfully to the church. I served on committees. Unique church where we have a carillon here. The University of Wisconsin-Madison has a beautiful carillon on campus.
Mm-hmm.
I had the opportunity to play the carillon at First Lutheran for 26 years.
Mm-hmm.
When I went to school down in Madison, I was invited to play down there. And so I had the pleasure, the absolute pleasure to play the carillon down there. So I very graciously and faithfully served the church. But about 19 years ago, I came to a point that I had to make a decision. It's historical in the church that women are not given certain rights and privileges in the church. They can't serve on committees, they can't serve on boards, they're not even they're not allowed to vote on issues of the church. And that always left a bitter taste in my mouth. And I kind of use that as an excuse, I think, to break away from the church, especially when I was invited to Union Congregational, which is the church across the park from my home church.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really eye-opening to see how open, how passionate they were about involvement of people in the church, male and female, young and old. And I thought, I guess I need to check them out. And I've been a member there for 19 or 20 years. I've never looked back. I've been very, very happy there. Seen pastors come and go. But right now, the staff, I think, is probably the best I've ever had.
Mm-hmm.
Having left, and then the hardest part about leaving your birth church, you feel like you're turning back on all those years that you were in confirmation class, and 12 years of perfect attendance in Sunday school and church. 12 years without missing a Sunday or church room. So that you felt that you're that you really have betrayed them or haven't been true to yourself. But I looked upon it as being a spiritual growth, and I still look back. I mean, many parts of the my birth church that I found that have given me a lot of comfort and support.
Mm-hmm.
I love the music. One of my hobbies, I collect hymnals. I have probably 120, 140 hymnals
mm-hmm.
From all my travels. And I still, just because of familiarity, I think you just kind of like what you grew up with.
Mm-hmm.
But so the next step was then to move to Union Church.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, they were exploring the issue of open and affirming, which
mm-hmm.
is allowing gay, lesbian, bisexual,
mm-hmm.
transgender members to be not only members of the church, but actually serve in many capacities in the church. Very progressive thinking, a Bible-based, they feel, and it caused a lot of stir within the congregation. They had a huge rift in the church on a different issue not that many years before,
mm-hmm.
which resulted in a split of the congregation. People left. There were a lot of hard feelings,
mm-hmm.
and many people weren't sure if they wanted to take on this issue as well.
Mm-hmm.
But they did, and it was strong leadership from the pastors and from the pastors, I believe, at the time,
mm-hmm.
and the church leadership, the moderator, and active people in the church,
mm-hmm.
and Congregationalists tend to do it a certain way. They really are true to their core, saying that education is important. So they're going to have meetings, and they're going to have many meetings and opportunities for people to get together and
mm-hmm.
And hash this out, address everybody's concern. I mean, no matter how small, no matter how large, they realized that this was a huge risk. It's a fairly well-off congregation, and there are going to be families that would be split on this issue, and they threaten to leave, and they pull their money out. Well, this issue is bigger than money. It was felt at the time, and it was a matter of fairness. And
mm-hmm.
again, they thought that that they were justified in looking at this from a biblical sense, and so they went into the process of. Brought in speakers, they brought in, they did study groups, and anybody who had a word to say about the issue had plenty of opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
They knew that it was eventually going to come to a vote, and they didn't want the vote to be 55 to 45. They didn't want it to be a squeaker, because they knew that was going to just cause even more dissent
mm-hmm.
in the church, and there were always going to be bad feelings.
Mm-hmm.
So education was so important.
Mm-hmm.
I was asked to serve on the committee and chaired some of these gatherings and study groups, and learned a lot about people in general. And
mm-hmm.
but it was a healthy process, and when the vote came, I think the vote that Sunday morning, a special congregational meeting was called, and it really took one of the elders of the church, or the elder members of the church, who was on the fence for a long, long time. I suspected that he
mm-hmm.
and his wife were against the whole proposal to begin with. Although they were educated and kind of worldly people, they just didn't know how they were going to vote on
mm-hmm.
this until their granddaughter came up to them a couple days before the actual vote
mm-hmm.
and said, and he raised his concern, because just before the vote he said that he had something to say, and we knew it was going to be profound.
Mm-hmm.
And he stands up and he says, granddaughter, approached me earlier this week and said, Granddad, you and Grandma were married in this church, weren't you? Yeah, sure. And my parents are married in the church? Yes. And she stressed that she wasn't gay, but she said, if I were to come to you and announce that that I was gay and wanted to get married in the church, how would you have felt? And he said, it really hit home. I mean, you really, really had to think
mm-hmm.
about this. It was always an issue outside the family at that point, because
mm-hmm.
It really didn't affect him. And he said he had to do a lot of soul searching, and
mm-hmm.
He said, my gosh, it would only be fair. I mean,
mm-hmm.
from what he knew,
mm-hmm.
he loved his granddaughter, he loved the church, he was trying to find some ground where he would say that he wouldn't approve of this and would have to vote against it. He made the decision. Well, it was such a heartfelt story that when the vote came, it was overwhelming. I think it probably came 93 or 95% to 3 or 5% against.
Mm-hmm.
And so the issue was resolved. Some families did leave the church. Some have come back. But actually, over the 18 years or so, we've seen just incredible growth among the LGBT community who are finding a home at Union Church.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the other congregation that I had, both, when I left First Lutheran, there was a gay church that was growing, was just starting. Just a very small group that would meet. This associated with Metropolitan Community Church, MCC. It's a nationwide Christian denomination founded by Reverend Troy Perry and the mother churches in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
I think they might have over 300 congregations in the United States, and they're also worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
And I was also invited to attend their services, and many times I would. I'd go to Union at 10 o'clock and then go over to MCC, Angels of Hope, at 11 o'clock because they needed someone to, they needed an accompanist.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I started serving that church to begin with. I was sitting around, and it was different. It was more freewheeling, and at one time, the pastor that served, very, very amazing pastor, came from a kind of a Pentecostal background.
Mm-hmm.
Ironically, even in his, he came out late in life. He had been married, had children, and Reverend Ken, just had a birthday, realized after his wife was dying, and he had a good male friend that helped him with his wife. She slowly faded away and died.
Mm-hmm.
Even his wife recognized that Harry would be a good match for Ken.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was her blessing on her deathbed, basically, mm-hmm. that said that, Ken, you know, I know that you and Harry have a real special partnership, and when I go, you're more, you know, you have my blessing to carry on. And so Ken and Harry have been together for a long, long time. It gave Ken the courage to come out, and subsequently his son also came out to him.
Wow.
And they're both active members in that particular denomination, the only father-son pastor in the Union Church, in MCC Church.
Mm-hmm.
So I would attend the MCC Church on Sunday. Was the accompanist, and enjoy that. Eventually became a member, and I'm fortunate that that particular church has gone into a decline for many, many reasons. I won't get into specifically, but they have their own building. How many churches can say that they have their own building that was paid for God's sakes? It was mostly led by a group of men who saw a need for it, it was just a wonderful place to be on Sunday afternoons, and they had other social events that evolved around the church. After Reverend Ken left, my God, he was in the mid-80s or so, he can't hang on forever, but he when he left, a female pastor came in and tried keeping things going, but it just wasn't the same. She left, and there's been an interim pastor who was supposed to have been there for just a year, who's been there now for almost 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
She comes down from Iron Mountain, Michigan, every Sunday.
Oh, gosh.
And so in that regard, so, you know, bless her for doing this. But the congregation is in severe decline, and now they've lost the building.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't justify keeping up, even paying the utilities and the insurance on it. So they're back to meeting at a little kind of a storefront situation out in Appleton or Kokona, I guess, halfway between Appleton and Green Bay.
Mm-hmm.
On a Sunday night, they have just the one service. But with that, with the decline of that congregation, I realized that I need to be, I guess, more focused on the one church, and so I've been at Union ever since.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very, very long answer to your question. I'm sorry, but
no, it's good. Wow. So, what year did the Union Church become open and affirming? Or like, when was the vote? When was
If I remember right, did I see 1995? or 97, I think.
97, okay.
97.
Right.
I think we just celebrated our 15th anniversary. So that process from when they started looking at becoming open and affirming to the actual vote was about 3 or 4 years. They really gave it a lot of thought. It wasn't just something that they decided after a couple of weeks. So, the repercussions of becoming open and affirming, if people thought that it was really going to change the church or it was going to become known as the gay church in Green Bay, those fears are certainly unfounded. But it is kind of nice to, on Sunday mornings to see people who are showing up, who are showing up for whatever reason, either disappointed in their current church or just what, but they've, it's generally at the invitation of the current members, straight or otherwise, who will invite people there. And those who do come, they become more than just members. They become active members in the congregation.
Right.
It's healthy for any church.
So what type of stuff is your church doing now related to like LGBTQ issues?
I wish I could say I was more well versed in that. There's certainly people in the church that are more qualified to speak on that. One act, I remember met him yesterday, Steve. We could tell you all the programming that he would like to envision the church doing, and doing a lot more outreach, doing a lot more specific program for LGBT and their allies, because that's just as important. And as a denomination, I think many congregations look upon us as a model, and that's kind of nice, and that's important about how to do the study groups and they're working towards becoming open and affirming. So, we don't want to be too, I guess we don't want to ghettoize ourselves too much. That can be a problem. You have organizations, either associated with churches or otherwise, who identify a need to bring GLBT people together, and then all of a sudden they become almost too insular. They don't, they're not aware of what they're doing is they're almost ghettoizing their own community. And that's not healthy. Our whole purpose, I think, was to kind of be a little bit more visible, be out there for the community, to ask us questions, to get to know us. And but again, if you become too if too comfortable in aggregating those people around you, like-minded people, you kind of forget that, that we have, there's a bigger purpose to what we're doing here. So we got to be mindful of that, I think.
Right. So what about trans and genderqueer people? Are there any openly trans and genderqueer people in the community? How has that changed over time?
Why? That's a tough one. It really is. And I can see the frustration in that community in particular. They realize that they don't have positive role models a lot on television or in the media in particular. It's been really much easier for gay and lesbian people to have come out over the years. Television programming, successes in Don't Ask, Don't Tell now. But they're like a minority within a minority, and it's got to be very, very difficult for them. People just don't understand them as well. My first exposure to transgender people happened down in Madison, strangely enough. And I didn't understand what was going on, but it wasn't until I actually sat down with one, and he opened up, and it was like the light went on, and I could understand exactly how he felt all his life, or start to get an understanding of how he felt. And so I never had a problem with it. But I certainly can understand even supportive married females, middle-aged married females, who tend to get these things a lot easier than most people do. Even they may have a problem with this. But little by little, things will change. It may have to take legislation in order to get it done, but it's still going to be a challenge for them. Specifically for the community, how have things changed?
Mm-hmm.
As I mentioned, one of the goals of Positive Voice here about four or 5 years ago, under great leadership from our president at that time,
mm-hmm.
identified the need for the trans group to be able to meet in the area, to get together, to exchange ideas and their concerns. And what started out as something just as a sparkle in someone's mind
mm-hmm.
has turned out to be fairly successful.
Mm-hmm.
The group meets in Appleton mostly, rather than up in Green Bay, although to accommodate people who live north of Appleton, they occasionally have meetings
mm-hmm.
At Harmony Cafe.
Mm-hmm.
And there might be 25 to 30, 35 people showing up at this, and they come from as far away as Milwaukee and,
mm-hmm.
and down from Marinette and upper Michigan, over from Wausau. And,
mm-hmm.
and it's just fascinating
mm-hmm.
how appreciative they are of a group like Positive Voice to have initiated this program for them. And now it's kind of self-directed. We just stand back and let them do their thing and support them whenever they need a little support with their programming. And it's good that they have that that refuge, at least now. That's predominantly males who want to present themselves as female.
Mm-hmm.
There really isn't a, there isn't as strong of a presence of female to male.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to find their own, or they have found their own support group at the women's bar here in Green Bay. And I do know that they've
mm-hmm.
had fundraisers where the drag kings, as
mm-hmm.
many of them are called,
mm-hmm.
Will get together. Kind of word of mouth that way, but.
Mm-hmm. And what's the bar's name here?
SASS is
SASS.
Yeah, is
okay.
The women's bar in Green Bay
mm-hmm.
on South Broadway.
Okay. Yeah. So you said your first experience
mm-hmm.
with a trans person was in Madison.
Yeah.
So was there, how did Madison compare to Green Bay
mm-hmm.
As far as like the trans like
mm-hmm.
presence and the LGBT
yeah.
presence?
Yeah, not that dissimilar, really. Granted, they always describe Madison as 25 square miles surrounded by sanity or something like that.
Yeah.
It's quite a liberal,
yeah.
progressive town, and pretty open to most people, for the most part. Again, they can then also be targets, easier targets for those who disapprove of either that lifestyle or that type of behavior.
Mm.
But I never really, this was many, many years ago,
mm-hmm.
And I don't get down to Madison as often as I want to, but I always imagine that the trans community down there is a lot more organized, much more of a presence. Certainly Milwaukee, I mean, you can see that certainly when they have their Pride Fest, and
mm-hmm.
and they tend to be a little bit more out there,
mm-hmm.
More visible. I think it's always going to be that way, though, unfortunately. Over the years, over the 30 years or so, 30, 35 years, the gay
mm-hmm.
community, the lesbian community had made great strides in activism and support. And
mm-hmm.
But the trans group, it's going to be tough. It's really going to be tough.
Right. So, kind of going off of that, what LGBTQ issues do you think there will be the most or the least changes in the future? What do you anticipate?
Yeah, certainly there's a marriage issue right now, and I eventually see that passing. It's incredible. When I was first coming out down in Madison, one of the first people I met was a roommate of someone who was going to be one of the state assembly leaders,
mm-hmm.
David Clarenbach. His roommate, Louis Larson. Who would have known? Because I remember stopping over at that place and they're working on campaign
right.
posters.
Mm-hmm.
And who would have known that, you know, in a matter of weeks, David would be a member of the state assembly, who went on to become assembly majority leader.
Mm-hmm.
And and was instrumental in getting Wisconsin law passed, the anti-discrimination law back then, which is gay and lesbian people.
Mm-hmm.
But the first such legislation nationwide. So, from that point, I mean, your question was about health. What issues will change? Well, gay marriage, it's gone beyond domestic partnership. Back then, the favorable rating of same sex domestic partnership would have been 80-20 against. When Mark Pocan, current state assembly person down in Madison area, who's running for Tammy Baldwin's congressional seat right now, he came up and gave a presentation with Positive Voice, and he thought that we're at the tipping point. That's probably 5-6 years ago, 7 years ago, maybe a little longer than that. And he said we're right on the cusp at that time of marriage equality being passed if it came to a vote in Wisconsin. And unfortunately, since then, we've had the vote against gay marriage.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, more recently, nationally, the numbers are there, and it's going to happen. It's not as scary of an issue as it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
The time will come. What else is going to change?
Or what do you think isn't going to change, too? Or the least amount of change?
Mm-hmm. I see gay adoption passing eventually.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be like dominoes. I think once a couple of these things fall, it's all going to pass.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're going to just look upon it as being discrimination. It's discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
And with success, you're going to have more success. And that will mean eventually for the trans community. You know, that was the issue that they had for many, many years. The trans community was saying that, okay, you guys are fighting in Congress and national level for gay lesbian issues. What about us? What about us?
Mm-hmm.
And they tried to include legislation that would include the trans community as well. And for whatever reason, it'd be something that'd have to be sacrificed when the final legislation is passed. Whatever small gains that you're making, it seems like the trans community was always kicked out.
Mm-hmm.
And the argument was there, let's do this incrementally. Let's get the successes that we can, and we'll feed off of that. And that's kind of been my philosophy, this incremental gains. Much to the dismay of others in the community, but I say, do your battles, win your battles when you can, and eventually you win the war. But what's going to fail? At this point, I'm pretty optimistic. I think that whatever we put our hearts to, it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
It may take some time, but
right. You talked a little bit about the 2006 marriage amendment in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember what the attitudes were in Green Bay or this area?
That's a good question.
Yeah,
I was really, really surprised that it was really a concerted effort, and as successful as they were, and eventually it did pass.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought they made some great gains. I saw a lot of community activism here in the Green Bay area. People you would never would have thought going out door to door, pounding on doors, and talking to people face to face. And that's
right.
how you flipped people's opinions. And although the measure lost, I think the groundwork was set.
Mm-hmm.
At least for a while.
Mm-hmm.
It may have actually stirred up the opposition, and which led to groups like Tea Party and things like that too. But although their issues are more financial than social, that's hard to say.
They're
kind of a scary group. I don't know exactly if anybody knows. I can point to what their main issues are, other than financial taxes and things like that. But I wrote to answer your question. When Fair Wisconsin did come up to Green Bay, as I mentioned, we did have the building, Grandpa's voice worked out of.
Right.
And it was a great partnership there.
Mm-hmm.
And they had that visible presence in the community. It was located on the corner of Green and
mm-hmm.
Baird, Green and Baird in Alloway, in a little mini mall. So people had to know on a day-to-day basis that, hey, we've got a GLBT organization here, and Fair Wisconsin's working out of these offices
mm-hmm.
right next to a consignment store and a burger place, ice cream burger place, and other little shops in the mall
mm-hmm.
That had to have an impact on the community. Not negatively, because we were good neighbors. And if anything, it had to be positive, because we didn't cause a disruption in the community.
Right.
Never any vandalism. And you know, just having a presence sometimes in the community without causing problems
mm-hmm.
Can leave a lasting impression, a positive impression, hopefully, on the neighborhood. So.
Right, yeah. So is there, I know in Appleton there is the domestic partnership,
yes.
Warden's passed. Do you, what, was there anything, any feedback here from that, or what do you remember about
that? That's a really good
question.
I don't know if you were aware of that. There was a similar situation in Green Bay.
Oh, wow.
A domestic partner couple.
Mm-hmm.
The one gentleman wanted to assure some benefits for his partner as a city worker.
Mm-hmm.
And it did go before the city council. It wasn't a county issue. I think it was a city issue.
City,
mm-hmm.
okay. Yeah.
And if I remember right, and
mm-hmm.
it stirred up a lot of interest on both sides in the community.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, anytime you have tough economic times,
mm-hmm.
People will use this as a weapon. So, well, we can't afford this. It's going to be too expensive. If we open up for this, it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Just another burden to the taxpayer.
Mm.
Neglecting to realize that it's not, should be a financial issue, should be a justice issue.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And it's something that I've discussed with my state senator years ago, saying that domestic partnership benefits should be just implied, I guess. And so it's going to cost the state too much. This happens to be a Republican state senator. And I said, well, give me the numbers. And had there been fiscal studies, that's
right.
Exactly how much
yeah.
is it going to cost the state.
Mm-hmm.
And when they come back, it's always less than 0.5% or
mm-hmm.
0.2% of. So it's not, it's never, ever a really huge financial issue. And it's really, shouldn't be more of an issue of justice than.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it'll ever come up again here in the city. I suspect we did have new elections this spring. There's been a change of the city council and the county board.
Mm-hmm.
I see potentially it coming up again. Excuse me.
Yeah.
And but the time is, they'll have to pick a time. They won't do it right away.
Mm-hmm.
I think change the mayor might,
mm-hmm.
it may happen. But right now, the political climate is not right for anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's certainly to come back is an issue. I'm very happy that Apple has been successful.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
They're not that much more progressive than Green Bay, but they certainly realize that if they present themselves as a kind of more welcoming and understanding community,
right.
It's only going to benefit the business community as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And so Green Bay has a lot to learn from that Appleton experience.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Wow. Was there anything else specific that you wanted to cover? And, anything at all?
Yeah. I was thinking about this last night and what I need to share.
Mm-hmm.
I think... one needs to realize, if you realize early on, you have a self-awareness that that you might be gay.
Mm-hmm. Right.
again, pick your battles. Safety is the primary concern. All I can say to young people who are coming out, if you're still at home, 13, 14, 15 years old, you know, as much as you want to be yourself, if you know your family,
right.
Be careful. You hear so many horrific situations where families do, you think that they'd be supportive, and these poor kids end up out on the street. It's certainly much easier coming out later in life, but these kids, they have this self-awareness much earlier in their lives now, and it's tough enough growing up as teenagers as it is. Getting through school, getting the first car, and trying to have some independence that way, and then have this layer of kind of self-awareness on top of it, and wanting to fit in and be accepted. I'm grateful that younger generation seems to be a little more accepting of their fellow students. Still going to be bullying, there's still going to be problems. It's all part of growing up. But at least I get some assurance that it's going to be, I think it's going to be a little easier for kids coming out. But if they do choose to do this, I would wish that they think about this before they make the announcement. And just want them to be safe.
Right. Yeah. Has there been any incidences in the community at the high schools or anything where there's been negative incidences?
Yeah, none that I know of.
Right.
It's certainly easy enough to find out. There's board members or people closely connected with Positive Voice who are allies, and they're teachers, and teachers who have kids who are have been open and out to them are now gone on to college and beyond. They are much more aware of what's going on the individual high school levels, junior high school levels. Pretty fortunate here. We don't have these horror stories that you hear in other communities. But that's not to say that something can spring up or things don't happen off campus.
Right.
And if they do happen, you just hope that they're attended to right away. That people in authority take responsible actions and reassure not only the kids involved, but also their parents that a school should be a safe environment for their kids to learn.
Right, yeah. Did you have any questions?
I guess it seems like Green Bay in itself, you haven't really mentioned any like big rifts in the community or a lot of really powerful negative incidents. So going back to like when before and during when you were in college and when you were coming out, was there any sort of community backlash or media involvement that you can recall that was a little bit scary?
That's a really good question. Actually, with the Pride Alive, soon to have their fourth summer picnic, you're always going to get protesters. And it's always the same handful of five or six people out there marching with their signs representing a church. And it's generally an offshoot of one of these fundamentalist churches out of Kansas or whatever. They know that they're going to get media attention. Unfortunately, the news services in the community want to give a fair, so-called fair and balanced representation of what's going on that day. So you can have this wonderful festivity where there's 2,000 or 3,000 people who are gathered for this wonderful picnic, increase some community awareness of the GLBT community. Vendors are there, entertainment is incredible, the food is good, and everything is fine. And they get their 30 seconds on the news story, but then the media feels that they have to give the protesters and you know, the four or five that show up, give them their same coverage as well.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't seem fair, but hopefully the public is aware that these crackpots are there just to get their faces in front of the media.
Mm-hmm.
Has there been a, one would think that this being a fairly conservative area, that there would be a more concerted effort to protest bars, to protest picnics and things like that, but it really hasn't been there. And so that's kind of encouraging.
Right. Why do you think that is?
You know, it's kind of a, it's always been kind of a laid-back community. Let's not stir the pot. And maybe it's their Germanic and Belgian backgrounds or so that are, or even Scandinavian backgrounds that they don't get involved in things. And
right.
If it had been something something more major, where there'd be a gang of rowdy gays going around tormenting kids or such, well, yeah, then you're going to see something. But it's never been that. You know, there are several adult bookstores in the area for many, many years. And I think either the city fathers or people behind the scenes realized that these were negative aspects of the community and they wanted to get rid of those, despite First Amendment rights and things like that. And they were finally successful, and all these establishments have closed down. And well, I mean, they're still open, but lots of activities, unsorted activities that used to go on in these places, has now is no longer there.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect that the activity is still going on. It's just even more clandestine elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
That's a whole conversation in itself, too.
Mm-hmm.
But a response to the LGBT community, positive or negative. It's been always been pretty low key.
Yeah.
And I kind of like to keep it that way.
Mm-hmm.
So what was it like coming out in this community?
Hmm.
Yeah, I was going to ask the same thing. I was like, wow.
It's strange here. I just had a birthday last week, Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Other than being quite active with my church, Positive Voice,
mm-hmm.
I've never really actually sat down and
right.
talked to my family about it. I just assumed mm-hmm. that they knew all the while. If they wanted to ask me, they could. So it might be strange to hear from me that you know, I never actually had that talk with my parents mm-hmm. or my sisters or so.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, I always had friends over. And we're always invited to family functions, and I think that's something, again, I've been very, very blessed that whoever I happened to be seeing at the time,
mm-hmm.
They're always welcome to family events. And so
mm-hmm.
I always viewed that as acceptance on my family's part, and that meant more to me than anything. You know?
Mm-hmm.
How fortunate I was to not grow up in a situation where these kids couldn't be themselves, or they had to distance themselves from their family. So.
Right, yeah. So,
To answer another part of that question,
right.
Professionally, it was never
right.
really an issue, too.
Right.
Was it more difficult for me finding a job because someone might suspect that I was gay or knew I was gay? That's never happened.
Mm-hmm.
Have I been passed over for promotions or things like that? Not to my knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I think when I went from hospital to retail pharmacy, I think management actually looked upon me as being as an asset because they were trying to reach out to new customers, and I think they assumed that, okay, if he is gay, he certainly has a way of interacting with 10% of the community
mm-hmm.
or so who,
mm-hmm.
who we
yeah,
could
yeah.
see as potential customers.
Mm-hmm.
And so many times I thought that that I'd been hired or it was an actual asset for me to be who I was. So,
mm-hmm.
I certainly haven't had customers, or at least confront me or personally challenge me because of it.
Right.
Mm. I guess you touched, backtracking a little bit, you touched on that there were some bashings in the area.
Mm-hmm.
Did the media cover those? How did they cover them, and what was the community's response to that?
Cricket actually was stabbed leaving his bar. He was a bartender at establishment, and he can speak to that if and when you interview him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's very lucky that he didn't die in that situation, but it was covered by the media. They caught the guy. He did do some time. It was positive. It was not like they didn't identify him as being kind of a self-imposed victim. I mean, that he caused, and they handled it actually very, very carefully that way. There have been other incidences of bashing, and the media has actually been pretty fair about it.
Right.
There's a time that a female working on staff as a local reporter for the Press Gazette was out.
Mm-hmm.
And she certainly has gone on to bigger and better things. She started out in this market and realized that she could serve larger communities better, and it was wonderful and great to have her back.
Mm-hmm.
But I think she kind of was put a face on the newspaper back then, and they kind of used her as a touchstone as to where they can go with certain stories.
Mm-hmm.
And you almost need those people in all types of work environments. Not necessarily be the person, go-to person, but at least it does create certain some awareness, I think, and that's healthy.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I really have.
Okay.
I think.
Yeah. When was the incident with Cricket? What year was that?
Oh my gosh. This goes back. I think last year was an anniversary. It could be 20 years ago already.
Oh, 20 years.
Yeah.
Okay.
Early 90s. Somewhere in that, and I have to excuse the way this place looks. I'm getting ready for the Pride tent next month.
Oh,
and so I've got tons of stuff. Actually, there were 17 other boxes worth of stuff that I had here. Those are all resource materials for Positive Voice when we did have our offices.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we lost the office, someone had to house the stuff, and I volunteered to take that over.
Yeah.
But 17 of those boxes did contain novels and nonfiction, fiction, resource books, and we've divested ourselves of those at a party. So if we were ever to have offices again, like the Milwaukee LGBT Center, which is such a successful multi-level facility, if we ever were to grow to that stature again, you certainly would like to have some sort of resource library.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just put out a call to the community, and people come with their books and drop them off. And it's so nice to have that drop-in center. Wow.
Mm, right. Yeah. So you're getting ready for Pride, you said.
Mm-hmm.
The Green Bay Pride, how is that received? Or how?
Well, this could be interesting this year. The initial leaders of the group, Andrea and Andrew, really threw themselves into this the first 3 years.
Right.
And they announced a year before this that last year was going to be their last year. And if the festivities were going to continue, that we're going to have to get organized. And people have stepped forward. But I tell you here, we're just less than 5 weeks away, 5-6 weeks away. And if they have been having organizational meetings and committee meetings, it's all behind the scenes right now.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they're working off the playbook that Andrew and Andrea have put together.
Mm-hmm.
Because basically it's like, this has to be done by this time, this has to be done by this time. And hopefully they've got all their permits and got all their vendors all lined up and all the entertainment. They've got the publicity out. They're still going to have to call upon tons of volunteers though the day of the event.
Mm-hmm.
Is it going to be as successful this year? Let's hope. I haven't really taken a look at the entertainment lineup there, but I rarely, this being the fourth year, I rarely get a chance to leave my booths to get out there and see what else is going on the grounds.
Yeah.
Between manning the history tent, working with Positive Voice tent, maybe getting over to Union Church tent, or at one time the MCC tent.
Yeah.
You don't get a chance to. To participate. So.
Yeah.
I'm gonna try to break away a lot more this year and get involved if I can. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's the atmosphere like at the Pride?
It's amazing. It really is, and it's more than just an event for LGBT people. Because there are families that do show up.
Mm-hmm.
It's really kind of neat to see parents show up, young parents with kids in their strollers. And it really is just like a day at Bay Beach or anything else.
Yeah.
And you would never guess, in many aspects, you would never guess that it was a predominantly gay event.
Right.
Because it's just a fun day.
Mm-hmm.
And you just hope the weather cooperates.
Yeah.
And even then, oh my God, the first year we were about ankle deep in rain, but the day just cleared up. And it was the first year, and it still turned out to be a success. Second year was even better. This past year, I think we had some rain late in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
But it kind of put a damper on things. But it's amazing. People show up, if they work weekends, I have to be to work for three. They'll show up at between 11 and 1, 2, 3, and then go off to work. Or those who do work during the day, they get there for the activities at night.
Yeah.
Headliners.
Mm-hmm.
There's always something going on throughout the day.
Right. Yeah. So sounds like you're pretty involved with the different tents at the Pride event.
Well, again,
yeah.
That's a nice thing about you can be as active as you want.
Mm-hmm.
And I just would really encourage people, younger people, to get involved.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you start getting into your 40s, 50s, 60s, spending 8, 9, 10 hours out in the sun gets to wear on you after a while. And especially you have to be there earlier than they have to set up and be there late to take down.
Mm-hmm.
It's a huge commitment of time, and I don't think these a lot of these young people realize that.
Mm.
Hey, this is a great day for them to hang out with their friends for 3, 4, 5 hours or so. But they've got to learn to give back, and I think if anything I want to impress upon people with this conversation is kids, there's those that have gone before you who have really given up their time and their resources to make it easier for them. It's kind of payback time. And many battles have been fought and won for you.
Mm-hmm.
And and many of you do appreciate it, but more have to get involved if they want to keep these battles, and have more successes in the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think that covers most of everything that we wanted to get through. So, do you have anything you wanted to add?
No, that's it. I really appreciate the fact that you've given me the opportunity to speak to you.
Right.
I certainly would be available if you have follow-up questions.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah, that would
be more than happy to. Or points of clarification.
Mm-hmm.
I can do that for you as well.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, sure. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Wish you a lot of success with this project. I think it's important.